Radio.
This is a talk by Brother Max Scully entitled The Dangerous Truth, Yoga, Tai Chi and Reiki, Everything a Christian Needs to Know. It was presented at the October Immaculata Rechat, which takes place at St. Thomas Becket Lewisham on the third Saturday of every month. Brother Scully is a De La Salle brother from Brisbane and has recently released a book entitled Yoga, Tai Chi and Reiki, A Guide for Christians.
Now, this is the second time I've been standing in front of you this year. I was here for the mission school earlier on, and I really enjoyed that because everybody seemed to be so hungry for what I had to say. So it's great to talk to an audience where people want to hear what you've got to say, and I feel that that's the case tonight. Tonight I'm going to be, the official title of my talk is The Truth About Yoga. The unofficial title that I'm going to use is Blowing the Whistle on Hatha Yoga. I'm going to stick with Hatha Yoga, not get onto Raja Yoga, because I find in this country many Christians, many Catholics are doing Hatha Yoga under the delusion that it's not contrary in any way to the Christian faith. Now I hope, if there's anybody here with that delusion, I hope to destroy the delusion tonight. That's my aim. But in the eyes of our society, Hatha Yoga is not only not evil, it's a real good. It's a health-giving activity. It's a relaxing activity. It's a spiritual journey. This is the message preached by our media. And if you dare go against what the media says, woe betide you. So I'm going to be talking about Hatha Yoga tonight, and I hope to blow the whistle in a convincing way. 3 years ago, I was on a retreat. Now, the brothers who were with me knew that I was writing a book about yoga and that I was canning it. And they said, as soon as I got there, they said, have a look at the counter. There's an interesting brochure on the counter there. Have a look at it. So I went to the counter, reception area, and I picked up this brochure. And on it, it's very interesting. Yoga with Mary Ann. Phone number given. Offers two styles of yoga, Hatha and Kundalini. Hatha, the traditional yoga, teaches you mindful postures, stretches, conscious breathing, and takes you into guided relaxation. Kundalini yoga, a dynamic style of yoga. It involves chanting, postures, breath work, relaxation, and meditation. It is a personal experience. All yoga practice is to connect body, mind, and spirit, and can become a way of life which then brings peace and calm to each new day. The choice is always up to the aspirant. And then when you turn over, we have a program at the retreat centre. Mondays, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m, Hatha Yoga. And Monday night, 6:15 p.m. to 7:45 p.m, Hatha Yoga again. Tuesday, another night session, 1.5 hours of Kundalini Yoga. Wednesday, another night session, 1.5 hours of Hatha Yoga. And Thursday, another 1.5 night session of Kundalini Yoga. And while we were doing our retreat, all these activities were taking place. It's happening at numerous retreat centres all around the country, perhaps not to the same extent, but I reckon about 90% of our Catholic retreat centres are being used for the practice of yoga. People come in and do it, and also for Tai Chi. So that's the situation we're looking at. And of course the message is that Hatha Yoga is a good spiritual experience for Catholics. Now, what's the situation in reality? Hatha Yoga may be taught in a way which is not particularly Hindu. It comes out of India, Hindu India, and its origins are in Hinduism. But it can be taught in a way that doesn't link itself with the Hindu religion. And when that's done, some Christians think, many Christians think, it must be therefore all right. It's not contrary to our faith. But one important thing they forget, in any yoga that I've looked at, any Hatha yoga that I've studied, and I've looked at lots of different kinds of Hatha yoga, I rarely find a technique. Well, there's no technique in yoga which does not alter the consciousness of the person doing it. Normally, there is some technique involved in which the mind gradually becomes a void, becomes totally empty. So, for example, most commonly, the technique used for emptying the mind is retarded breathing. Now, what does this mean, in fact? Retarded breathing is simply this. You breathe from the abdomen and you breathe in slowly. Draw the abdomen in very slowly. One, two, three, four, hold. And you hold it for 4 seconds. And then slowly you let the breath out. One, two, three, four, hold. One, two, three, four, and then breathe in slowly again. Gradually you increase the pause from 4 to 6 to 8, perhaps to 10. Then slowly, even more, in a very slow way, counting up to 10, let it out. And then when the air is expelled, you hold it again for safer. It may reach a point of up to 8 to 10 seconds. Now, if while you're doing that, you then try to empty your mind as your instructor indicates, any thoughts that come into your mind, you let them pass like a ship in the night. You just let them go. You don't get all uptight about it. Oh, there's a thought coming. Oh, well, I'll just watch the thought and say goodbye to it. So gradually, gently, you try to empty your mind of all images, of all thoughts. Now, as time goes by, for some people it takes quite a while, but if you practice this, as they do here at Baulkham Hills, for 1.5 hours every day, if you 1.5 hours in the session, then you go home and you do it for that same length of time at home, in a very short time, you can become quite proficient at emptying the mind. So the mind becomes a void. Now, when you do this, what happens is, when your mind becomes a void, your intellect stops acting, you become uncritical, you accept whatever is and whatever happens, and your will becomes very passive. And your will and your mind become very open to whatever is out there. And so often, demonic powers seize upon that opportunity to take control of your intellect and of your will. And so voiding the mind is an extremely dangerous situation. Actually, it goes way, way back. This business of emptying the mind through breathing and so on goes way, way back into the earliest forms of religion, shamanism. The ancient shamans were experts at getting in contact with the spirits of the dead and the spirits of false gods and the spirits of demons, but they didn't recognize them as demons. These were false gods or angels. But in fact, through emptying their mind, the shamans began to receive revelations, and a number of religions, which are not in accord with the Catholic Church and the Catholic teaching, a number of religions developed that way, and there were errors in them because these errors were introduced through revelations from demonic spirits. So that, but when I speak about retarded breathing, that's what I mean. And that is one of the most powerful means of emptying the mind. Another technique, even if you just slow your breathing down and don't retard it, you just breathe in and out very slowly as you do in transcendental meditation, you can repeat a word which is meaningless. It doesn't have to be the name of a Hindu god, although in Hindu Hatha Yoga, that's what they do. They're given a name, often of a Hindu god, but they're not told the meaning of the name. And they just repeat meaningless syllables, over and over again. That's a mantra. A mantra is not just a word that you repeat. It's a sound that you concentrate on. The sound is the important thing in a mantra, and they try to get resonant sounds. And you're not allowed to think of the meaning of the mantra, so you repeat these meaningless sounds over and over again. That by itself, according to Satyananda, who was a world famous guru who set up an ashram here in Australia and is still going up in Queensland, Satyananda reckons that one of the most powerful ways of emptying the mind is through the repetition of a meaningless sound and just focusing on that and allowing your mind to become emptied. So those are the two most common methods which are used in Hatha Yoga. Now, I just want to explain or just give an account of a famous psychologist, a parapsychologist is one who deals with unusual phenomena which cannot be explained by rational means. They're things outside the normal sphere, like ghosts, for example. That's one of the things that paranormal psychologists will study. Well, this particular psychologist was working at a university in the Midwest of USA. He himself had been strongly psychic from childhood, and he was drawn into this area of paranormal psychology. And he became so proficient at emptying his mind by a form of Raja Yoga, he developed a technique over a period of time. He practiced solidly for years with techniques of concentration and emptying. He was able to, for the past 8 years, he was able to live in an altered state of consciousness all the time. Now, he was so strongly psychic, he fascinated his students, and before long, his parapsychology classes were chock-a-block with students. He had all these extraordinary psychic gifts. And what he did, he had a Christian background. He was originally Episcopalian. And he was disillusioned with Christianity. And he wanted to do an experiment by altering his consciousness to go back into the past, to one of what he believed was one of his past lives. To go back to one of his past lives in the 4th century AD, in which he believed he was a man, an Italian man called Petrus. And by going back to the time of Petrus, in a particular underground church in a small village in Italy, he believed, and he found this out through clairvoyancy, he believed that he could repeat an ancient ritual performed by Christians in Rome during the 4th century, and he would discover really what Christians were doing at the time and how it affected them. So he took a group of his best students, a team of them, and they flew across to Italy. And they went down into a cathedral, and in the cathedral there was an ancient church which went downwards under the earth. So they went down the stairs to this ancient church, and there was a design on the floor which he believed came from the 4th century. He was going to repeat this ancient ritual of what he believed was Christianity. As he instructed his students very carefully, he was taped up, wired up to a tape recorder, and they were going to record everything, and he warned them if anything goes wrong to stop things immediately. So he came down the stairs and he got ready to do this contact to do this ritual. And as he began to do the ritual, he suddenly lost control of himself. And he just went to pieces. He collapsed on the ground. His students became alarmed. They stopped the experiment. And they knew something was seriously wrong. They took him back to America. And in America, this parapsychologist by the name of Carl, knew that he was possessed by an evil spirit. And he contacted a priest who'd been a member of one of his classes in the university, who happened to be an exorcist. And Carl could never work out why he could not read this guy's mind. See, he was a mind reader. That's one of the psychic gifts he had. He could read everybody's mind in the class, except this one man. He was a priest and he was an exorcist. And he gradually worked out why he couldn't read his mind. Well, he immediately got on the phone to this priest who had once been his student and said, "Father, I want you to perform an exorcism over me. I'm in a really bad way." And the priest had already received a message from the Lord to expect this phone call. So he came immediately, as soon as he could, and he was a very experienced exorcist, and he spent 1 week, not if they had a break at night time, but for 7 complete days, he worked on this very difficult exorcism. Apparently there was one spirit in him which was extremely powerful and wouldn't go. So there was, as it were, a spiritual wrestle took place between the exorcist and the spirit inside this man. And he took him through the whole routine and got him to say prayers and renounce what had happened and sought repentance for what he'd been doing. And eventually, after 1 week, the exorcism was completed. But the man, sad to say, was a physical wreck, an absolute wreck, who had to be rushed to hospital, and he spent 11 months in hospital recovering from that exorcism. Eventually, he was never back to the same degree of health that he'd had before, but he made a very interesting statement, which he wrote an open letter to his former student, to his students. He resigned from the university, gave up his parapsychology, and he wrote this letter to his former students. And in it, he said this: "My central error, which was both intellectual and moral in character, concerned the nature of human consciousness. Like many before me, and many others nowadays, I found that with rigid and expert training, I could attain a fascinating state of consciousness, a complete absence of any object in my awareness. I found I could attain a permanency on this plane of consciousness." Now, he's not the first or the only person to have reached that point. Many others in history have done the same thing. And now the rage in New Age for the last 50 years or so has been altering one's state of consciousness. See, Christians believe that the most important thing in life is developing relationships. New Agers believe that the most important thing in life is altering your state of consciousness. So we've got, in Christianity, developing human relationships, particularly with God. God is a person, not an impersonal being. In New Age stuff, often they regard God as an impersonal being. And the thing is to alter your consciousness so you develop some kind of connection with this impersonal being. Now, for the last 50 years or so, in New Age, what they did to alter the state of consciousness was to use drugs. LSD was one of the most common drugs used to enter into an altered state of consciousness. And during that state, people often sort of had experience of the spirit world, of gods, different gods, Hindu gods, all sorts of gods, and also make contact with the spirits of the dead, who were demons disguised as spirits of the dead. So I'm telling you this story here because of the fact that one can move into a seriously spiritual dangerous area and puts oneself in the danger of committing serious sin by entering into an altered state of consciousness. One of the things that can lead very quickly to spiritual dangers is conducting seances. We're all aware of that. Because you're putting yourself in direct contact with a demonic power. And you can do the same thing by altering your state of consciousness. Now, in Hatha Yoga, it's so easy to develop through retarded breathing, through a mantra, of altering your state of consciousness. Same thing in transcendental meditation. So, some of the high-powered spiritual people in the Catholic Church have made the mistake of thinking if they can divorce yoga from its Hindu roots, it's then okay. What they fail to realise, it's not okay because you've still got the altered state of consciousness, even without talking about Brahman, the supreme Hindu god, or about Chi, the supreme god of Taoism. Even without talking about that, you are all in both of those activities, you are taught to alter your state of consciousness. So I want to give you now a couple of examples where this sort of thing so easily happened. An Anglican minister's wife, living in the United Kingdom, presented herself to a Christian counsellor. Her presenting symptoms were these. Her enthusiasm for reading the Bible had suddenly evaporated. She was in a state of confusion in all aspects of her Christian life. She was now unable to lead the mother's union any longer in spontaneous prayer. Every part of her church work was an effort. So she told the counsellors this, and she said, "I don't know what's caused it. I've always been a great assistance to my husband, and I've really enjoyed my work in the parish. Now it's a real chore." So they asked her a few questions. And then they asked her a question. They said, when did this happen? And was anything else going on when it happened, when it began? She thought for a while. Well, she said, this probably has got no connection at all, she said. But about two months ago, my husband let the parish hall out for yoga. And myself and a few others in the parish decided they would take part in the yoga classes. But this was just a health activity and there's nothing about religion in it. So that wouldn't be that. These counsellors who were experienced in this kind of thing picked up their ears straight away and they said, well, let's not be so sure. So they asked her a few more questions and they could see that it happened almost after doing a couple of sessions of yoga, this began to take place. And they said, what you have been doing is altering your state of consciousness, and that set up a tension between your Christianity and whatever forces are operating through yoga and possibly demonic forces. She didn't believe them. So they had a long discussion, and eventually they managed to convince her that the cause of her problem was the doing of yoga. Hatha yoga, the innocent kind of yoga, the yoga that's very good for your health. And here it was destroying her Christian life. But this is the acid test. What they then said was, we want you to do the three R's. The first R is repent of having been involved in yoga. And so she repented in their presence. Second R, renounce your yoga. In other words, make a promise to God you not only have repented of it, but you're never going to do it again in your life. So she did. And the third thing then they did was, the third R was to renew herself through prayer. And so they gathered around and they began to pray with her for a few minutes. At the end of it, she said to them, "I'm all clear now. Everything is okay." And she left that room totally free from the oppression that she'd been having, and returned home with great joy, and the problems never occurred again, which indicates quite clearly that the problem was hatha yoga. Another case, more serious this time. This is about a true story of an American woman, Christina, who was an average housewife. She was pregnant with her first child, and she took the advice of health publications that she'd read, which recommended a form of retarded breathing to make the birth much easier, because often they do recommend forms of yoga to stretch the muscles and so on and relax, so that the birth is a much easier, happens much more easily. And so she did a method which was very popular. It's been very popular for a long time, but it was very popular about 40, 50 years ago, called the Lamaze method of breathing. And it's just yogic breathing, just what I demonstrated to you a little while ago. So she did this retarded breathing each week. And then when the time came for her to give birth, she went into labour, and she said she could feel this surge of extraordinary energy coming up her spine as she gave birth. And it went through her whole upper body. And she didn't know what it was. But she said it was totally overwhelming. And as soon as she'd given birth, she was given an injection of morphine to block out what was happening inside her, to stop it. But after her birth, she then became fascinated with hatha yoga. She'd been doing the breathing only. Now she went on to do the breathing and the exercises. And she got very involved in hatha yoga without attributing anything spiritual to it. And then she became a disciple of a well-known guru from India called Muktananda, who was in America at that time. Muktananda, by the way, set up an ashram over here at Dulwich Hill. And that's a story in itself, but they do the kind of yoga that Muktananda advocated. But Muktananda had an extraordinary power. When he gave the Shakti Pat in yoga is when you put your hand, a bit like laying hands on people. When the guru puts his hands on people, you get a shot of what they would call pranic energy. It's demonic power. And often the person will fall down, like resting in the spirit. They will see stars, they'll see different colours sometimes. And the kundalini will be released. And kundalini is you can think of it as a dormant snake at the base of the spine. And suddenly, all this energy is unleashed from the base of the spine and goes right through your body. And if you don't know how to control it, you can go mad. You can have a breakdown, you can commit suicide. And the Indian yogis all tell you this. In India, there are techniques of controlling it, but often in the West, those techniques are not there. Well, this housewife, Christina, once she Muktananda told her, look, what was happening when you gave birth was the release of the kundalini energy, and it can get easily out of control. Now, under Muktananda, with his Shakti Pat and so on, the kundalini did get out of control, and she had a total breakdown, nervous breakdown. And she looked around for some kind of help at the time, and she consulted a famous Jungian psychologist, Joseph Campbell. And Campbell recommended that she take LSD to help her on her spiritual journey, spiritual transformation. So she took LSD, and then he referred her to a New Age guru called Stan Grof. And Stan Grof was into altering states of consciousness. He became her counsellor, and eventually her marriage broke up and she married Stan, and the two of them now have become New Age gurus, helping people to cope with spiritual emergencies caused by different things, including the release of the Kundalini. And together with her husband, they have established 50 spiritual emergency centres around the world. They did this about 40 years ago. They've been going now for quite a while. And to help people who've had these kind of breakdowns. Now, this business of the Kundalini suddenly being set off without warning is becoming increasingly common around the world as people get more and more involved in yoga. And there's been self-help groups established in different countries, Sweden, Denmark, people who've had breakdowns because of the release of the Kundalini. They've got together to help themselves, and they get one of them, I think it's Sweden, let me see. There's one group. Hold on, we've got the brief off the internet here. Yes, the Denmark group informs us. We have got hundreds of mails from people around the world who have been damaged by these artificial spiritual exercises such as yoga. Kundalini arousal occurs especially as an unintentional side effect of spiritual exercises whose goal is higher consciousness. Many people have gone insane from the tremendous Kundalini energy and got diagnosis as psychosis, schizophrenia, and other similar mental diseases. Such networks lament the fact that teachers of such ASC activities, such as Deepak Chopra, do not always warn their students of possible dangerous side effects, nor how to go about treating them. So it can be quite, that's one of the side effects of Hatha Yoga. I think that's probably, let me see. Oh yes, there's, that's probably it. Now the other thing that can happen as a result of getting involved in Hatha Yoga, and particularly Kundalini Yoga, is that with Hatha Yoga, once you get into the altered states of consciousness, you begin gradually to develop certain psychic powers. And just I'll run through the list of these psychic powers, which is sometimes why people do the yoga. Astral travelling, communication with the spirit world, the dead, spirits, ghosts, gods, ability to read minds, healing oneself and others, called yogic healing or pranic healing, automatic writing, the reading of people's auras begins to develop, awareness of one's own or others' so-called past lives. Now, all of these, in fact, some of those things I've read out are contrary to the word of God. For example, consulting the dead is forbidden by the Bible and by the Catholic Church. Awareness of one's own or others' so-called past lives. The church teaches it is given a person once to die and after death the judgment. Yet some of these gifts talk about past lives which don't exist. So it's demonic activity that gives the impression they exist. Now, if some of this package of psychic gifts is demonic, the whole package is demonic. And the history of the occult indicates that all these activities I've just read out to you are demonic, basically it. And they're coming out of Kundalini Yoga and or Hatha Yoga. But the Kundalini makes these gifts a lot stronger and you get them a lot quicker. So it is really, really dangerous. Well, I hope I've given you second thoughts about doing a so-called innocent Hatha Yoga as a health-giving activity, because it might have some benefit for the body, but it can kill the soul. Thank you.
That was Brother Max Scully discussing yoga, Tai Chi and Reiki. For more talks, interviews and programs, or to find out about Brother Scully's book, visit cradio.org.au.
The history of the occult indicates that all these activities I've just read out to you are demonic, basically it. And they're coming out of Kundalini yoga and or Hatha yoga. But the Kundalini makes these gifts a lot stronger and you get them a lot quicker. So it is really, really dangerous. Well, I think kind of, I hope I've given you second thoughts about doing a so-called innocent Hatha yoga as a health-giving activity, because it might have some benefit for the body, but it can kill the soul. Thank you.
That was Brother Max Scully discussing yoga, Tai Chi and Reiki. For more talks, interviews and programs, or to find out about Brother Scully's book, visit cradio.org.au.